The following podcast is not relating to my teachings and work at Del Cid Medical Center and is for entertainment purposes only.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Life of Flow. And this time we have a repeat offender.
Our first, no, it was Jill Somerset.
Oh, Jill's been with us a couple of times.
Yeah,
but,
maybe.
Oddly enough, people like coming here and we have another opportunity to talk to one of our favorite peeps, Lorenzo Patron, interventional radiologist. And specifically, this was not a technical talk. It was a bit more about a project that he has been building. It's a meeting by the name of FYA, which means Find Your Algorithm. And this was his opportunity of essentially switching up and refurbishing the, quote, meeting industry. And I think he's doing a fantabulous job. And if you haven't heard about what FYA is, then stick around, listen, learn, and then go and get your ass to this meeting because it is a lot of fun. And it's in London.
Yeah, I want to go.
You're going?
Well, I don't know. But it'll be down.
Well, you're invited as a faculty. And so
am I?
We can figure. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Then yes, I'm going.
If it hasn't happened, I'll make that happen.
Yes, make it happen.
All right, guys, everybody stick around and we'll come right back.
Vamos.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.
All right, Lorenzo, thank you so much for coming to the Life of Flow podcast. We're missing a host today. Miguel is, I don't know what Miguel's doing. He's going to show up mysteriously at any time. But, you know, I reached out because I saw your post about your conference and thought, you know what, I would love to discuss, you know, how this came about and what do you think about medical education going forward. You know, the mixing of media, you are super active on social, you're always educating on social, plus you have this in-person project. So yeah, thought we would talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, thanks a lot, first of all, for the invitation. It's a real pleasure to come back. I was one of the first people to be on your podcast, and I'm happy that it's going well. And congratulations for that.
Thank you.
I thank you also for picking up this topic, which is very important to me. So my own event, which is also my personal view on how the education, medical education needs to be, in my opinion, delivered. So essentially, FYA was born years ago. And actually, this is the fifth edition. And it's a complete new concept based on interaction. And that is what is all about. I think that's the most important tract of my event. Why? Because every talk is pretty long. So essentially, every talk, let's say, every speaker has 20 to 30 minutes. And during this conversation, let's say, because it's not like a proper teaching, then there are loads of ways to interact with the people in the faculty and with the people on the floor. Every speaker has to put some pulse inside the presentation, and the people on the floor have flags. So there's a red flag, a yellow flag, and a green flag. And every poll, people vote. And it's about us as a say icebreaker to go around and ask people, oh, everyone is green, why are you red? Or the opposite, you know, oh, everyone is yellow. What do you think about converting yourself to red? And actually, this really stimulates the discussion, really makes people on the floor feeling part of something. Not anymore the speaker who teaches you, who gives your his insight or her insight, and you passively receiving it, but it's more like, okay, guys, let's share what we think. And I think that's the main thing about this event. So people can feel part of the event, even when being simply listeners. So, and yeah, I mean, I think it works because we every year we double our numbers, which is very nice. So now last year we had 400 people. And also we increase the offer that we're giving to the people who are attending. So we started as peripheral because I'm much more a peripheral guy than anything else. And then we opened to Venus last year and we're opening to Aorta this year.
Oh, that's awesome. Welcome, Miguel. Welcome.
Hey guys, sorry about that. But I was listening to Your voice is so loud, I can listen it outside of the audio phones in the back. And, you know, I've always been a fan. Lorenzo, you know this well. I've dragged you across the ocean a couple of times to work with us in Latin America, and I appreciate you for doing that. Do you think your meeting is a response to this kind of staleness, this kind of boringness that a lot of the other meetings seem to have found their way into? Or is it just something new? Or maybe a combination of both?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think that medical education, like anything else, evolves with time. And I think that, we were probably not even born when there were like a diapo and people were having like 30, 40 minutes of teaching in front of people who were listening. And that actually was pretty boring. Then if you want to do a timeline of vascular education, probably VIII Congress came. And in part, Charing Cross also. And VIII is still the same after 50 years, after 51, actually, because they're going to be the next year. But the thing is, for VIII, the important thing was to break this boring interaction with long talks and it's a waste of time repeating the same things on and on. So essentially, he came up with this new idea at that time, 50 years ago. Let's do something very quick. So very, very straight to the core of what you want to say. You have 5 minutes. In these 5 minutes, you need to convince about what's your opinion and what's the new research around this kind of stuff. What I think that we are missing from this model right now at the moment is the discussion. So there are loads of talks which are super quick, but there's no discussion. So you keep the pace high, but you don't interact with the faculty and especially with the floor that much as I would have liked. This is compared to all the other, what you call boring meetings, where actually there's always the speaker, like having at 7-10 minutes time, interacting always with the faculty, always with the panel, and never with the floor. There's very little time for the floor. So my meeting was the answer to my own attitude. I'm a guy who likes to ask questions, who likes to interact, who was very curious about things. And many times when you have any conversation, it's not like you talk for 10 minutes and then ask you questions. Usually, when someone has a conversation with another clinician, another person, you talk for some minutes, they ask you a question, then I interact a little bit, like in a podcast. It's not like I'm talking to you for an hour and then you're asking me questions at the end. And so my need was to try to make things more, close to a conversation than to a podium, arrogance in a way, education, one-way message. So when I thought about my event, I did not only think about a long time for discussion, but also thought about putting a discussion within the presentation. So everyone is happy to raise the hand, ask a question, and the question will be answered. It needs a bit of course, ability from the people who are managing that to not to make it too, let's say, chaotic, but usually it works well. And so I think that's the answer to the old way in which people were educated is to create a bond between the floor and the faculty, because it's not always that the faculty knows so much more about things compared to the people on the floor. And people on the floor are clinicians. They are brave people. They are people who are interested. They are curious. They paid even to come to your event. So they want to interact. They want to share their opinions and their knowledge. And, it looks like it's working. Let's see. We're going to tweak, of course, things as we go more and more every year. But I think that this is hopefully the new way to educate, and to use the flags makes everything very evident. Because if you use palette, for example, as a one palette, which is red, one palette, which is green on two sides, if you raise the palette and you mean a red answer, all the people behind you will see a green. So it's very difficult for people to understand what other people are thinking about if you don't see clearly what the answer is from the color of whatever you put in there. And this is what I think is the most interesting part of learning. You make people aware the other people could think different. So let's say I'm a guy who does something which is very red. In our unit, we do red all the time. And the poll is about, as I said, red, green, and yellow. And when the faculty speaker asks the question, I absolutely would raise my red flag. But if I'm surrounded by green flags, then probably this just pushes me thinking that maybe in my own little world, I'm thinking that red is great, but maybe green could be better. So if you're sensible enough, maybe you are pushed in a very, let's say, kind way to change your practice. Or either you are like such an innovator or something that you put green and all the other reds will say, oh my God, what he says is super clever and maybe we are all wrong. So it could be anyway.
So in retrospect, it's easy to say that I didn't know your statistics about doubling each year. If it was a business, we would definitely invest in it. But it seems like that is a feedback that has given you the certainty that this makes sense. Because in a way, I could foresee, and I've been there myself, where you create a project thinking this is what people love. This is what people want. Because this is what I love and this is what I want. And then what happens is you're just projecting your own needs onto a project. And then you realize that was a very selfish move. Like it wasn't a thoughtful move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you may just fall victim of thinking that everybody is as energetic as Lorenzo Patron, but Jesus Christ, we're all maybe at 1% of what his energy is. But the fact of the matter is now in retrospect, you could say, well, I think I was right. I mean, the numbers support me, but it's a big bet because, you know, why is it not the opposite? Why is it that people maybe just want to come and listen and want to hide and don't want to have the fanfare of these flags and these, you know, almost like, your virtue signaling of what you are, what you're not, you know, like just, it could, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Like it's a bet. It was a bet.
Yeah. I think most innovation is like that, is you identify then that is kind of the question that I wanted to come to.
No way.
In 2024, what is the educational need for people that have, that have finished training? Or even how is this going to bleed into training? So what do we need? Because we have a bunch of conferences where we've mentioned this before, the same people talking about the same things. And is that filling a need or is that like an organism that keeps feeding itself and growing just because the mechanisms are there? The connections with industry are there, the models are there, but is it filling what people need at this time?
And what people need at this time? Answer that while also answering me, which was, how did you make a bet not thinking this was just going to be self-serving and something that people really needed? And I think it's essentially the same question in two different ways. Is what did you analyze? What was your identification of the audience's needs that made you think this novel way of presenting the truth would be loved and revered?
I'm proudly say I'm young enough to have been more close to the, let's say, to the listeners than the faculty. Because, I mean, I've been a listener very, very recently. What did I love the most from conferences? I'm talking educationally speaking. I was loving the interaction which happened after. And I'm not just talking about drinking something together, dancing and laughing. And, you know, I think I'm pretty a master about that. But I'm talking about educational interaction after the main conference. So, I mean, I was going to people and I would say, oh, you know what? Did you see that? Yeah, I have this case and on the phone. Oh, yeah, I have this one. And everyone was interacting like very randomly. sharing things that everyone, even me, who are like, who was a young physician, had in my phone, had my ideas. And actually this kind of brainstorming with people at the bar or, you know, while walking to dinner or whatever was the most interesting part of the whole event. So I said, why can't we make this most interesting part, at least for me, the center of the conference? Because I probably think that to present data at conferences is sort of that. You know, in the modern era where you have internet, where you have iPads, where you have like big phones, where you have, you know, like any kind of a social media, if I want to read a paper, I will read it. I don't need you to read me a paper during a conference. I need you to show me tips and tricks to come out from situations in a case-based manner in order to come out from my everyday struggles. And this doesn't mean that when I present you my tips and tricks, I don't cite papers, I don't refer to literature. Of course I will do. But it's not like I'm presenting the paper full length and then I'm introducing some little hint of personal experience. I want this to happen the opposite way. I'm going to show you my own experience and how I found my algorithm via my personal experience and the literature which is present on PubMed. So the thing is, when you translate that to a bigger format, of course, as you said, you know, it's new. And of course, you need to make it simple, make it like you can't feed the egos of the faculty too much, because you put yourself in a position where, guys, I'm sharing what I do and I'm happy to hear from you what you do. And that's also about the media campaign, you know, where I put the faculty in a bit of a funny position. Every year I try to find something funny. Of course, many people would say, oh, this is a joke. But I invite them to be at FYA because, you know, if I cover the conference with jokes in order to make it, of course, a bit more appealing, a bit more like loud, then inside there is a lot of content. And whoever comes is happy. So last year results with the feedbacks were like at the question, would you come back? 98.8% of the people, I'm sorry for the few I'm missing, said, yes, I will come back. So that makes me happy. That makes me feeling that what we are doing is possibly the right thing, at least for some.
Other than me, who do you think was the 1.2% that said they wouldn't come back?
There's another guy.
So it was Miguel and another guy.
Yeah.
But to be clear, I have been able to go because I started a huge project and I had to dedicate myself. But this was one of the most entertaining, didactic, enticing meetings. And I think, Lorenzo, everything in life, every business, everything we do, it's about timing, right? Sometimes you execute at the wrong time and it fails. Sometimes you execute at the right time and it's phenomenal. And it may be the same thing. I think this is, I was trying to see if you would gravitate towards this because this is what I have gravitated towards in Hindalot. You know, we've been doing this meeting now, 8 years or so? 9 years. When we did our first Hindalot, and for those of you that never heard of this, it's Endovascular Latin America. And we've been working in different countries in Latin America, including primarily Mexico. But we're going to start bouncing around different countries. But anyway, what we found was there was a very unknowledgeable group of specialists. There was not a lot of people doing endo when we started this. There were people that didn't know how to put a sheath in, okay? And today, most everybody in that audience has experience and is doing cases. And so I would say that maybe in the last year, Lorenzo, through partially your inspiration, but also significantly through the feedback we're getting from the audience, it's become almost like at this point, a workshop for pedal access is not that important.
So what is important now?
Because everybody there does it already, you know? And so what's important is, you know, what Lorenzo has been saying is like, now it's more about, we're all sort of equal, man, at the end of the day, right? I mean, when I started this, you know, when I went to Leipzig in 2006, the fact of poking a posterior tibial retrograde was ludicrous, right? It was like, you know, now it's almost like a norm. And so, you know, then how much more crazy are you? And I would say probably not. But now at this point, we're probably pushing ourselves. We're doing a little bit more than the other guy. We're poking antegrade in the distal tibial, right? We had Marta Lobato talking about some crazy stuff they do up in Spain. And I think that that's what's happened. I think that the faculties have been leveled. I think everybody is caught up to a point. Mm-hmm. And now you would be pompous to think that what the audience wants is for you to just reverberate, regurgitate a bunch of data. They don't care. And they're smart enough to look at it themselves, right? Shit, now with AI, I can put ChatGPT, I can put a PDF of a best CLI, and within 3.1 seconds, it gives me a perfect summary, better than anybody out there, of what the...
Yeah, there's a side note, there's a thing called Notebook LM, and you can put like 50 different documents, so 50 different papers, and you can tell it to make you a podcast directed towards like medical professionals, and you can listen to it in your car while you're driving,
so you realize,
about absolutely anything.
So you realize... What I'm, you know, this is where we're at.
Sorry, but
now.
Is this real life? Is it this an actual podcast, or are you recorded with ChatGPT? No, just to make
sure. It makes it from, we are all AI.
Life of Flow may sound perfect, but it's not ChatGPT fuel, okay? Yeah. A lot of what we do is, though.
Quick break coming up. Stay with us for something to add more flow to your life.
Hey guys, this is Miguel and Lucas, and we wanted to talk to you about a super interesting project.
Name of this project is Amputation Nation. It's going to be a 6-part documentary series, and we definitely want you to look at it, watch it, digest it, support it.
Yeah, so visit amputationnationthemovie.org to support and give love to these people that are doing a great job.
Without a doubt, we're underdiagnosing peripheral arterial disease. It has not gotten the attention that it should.
Every 4 minutes, there is an amputation in this country due to PAD and diabetes. We also know that 85% of these amputations are preventable.
There is good care available here. Closed minds are what we have to get rid of.
Thank you for staying with us. Now let's get back to the show.
I'll just say, I just really think that we are, I don't necessarily think, it's V became stale or Viva's become stale. I think the audience outgrew every main platform meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the ones that will survive will continue to be those that are fueled by industry primarily, massively, right? A TCT, right? These are expos. They're big halls full of these massive companies putting thousands of, tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to wow you with whatever. But at the end of the day, the fat in the middle, I think, is going to go away. And then meetings like this, like Lorenzo's meeting, are the ones that are going to perpetuate, because they've level set. They've realized that the audience has outgrown, or at least has reached the faculty. And I think in a very astute, maybe you've thought about it. Maybe it's just been something that you came up with, not thinking about it. But here's my science about it. You making fun of the faculty level sets it even more. They've level set themselves. That probably a few guys in the audience already are better than anybody talking at the meeting. And then you already bring them, you make them humans, you make them normals, you make them mortals, you make fun of them. And then the ice is broke. Yeah. I think that there's a magic in that. And we,
you make it more family. You make it more family. I think that's the trick. You know, it's if you make people feeling confident. I mean, well, I've always been a very confident guy talking to, you know, I was going to Andrew Smith, asking him his question. I was going to Kundaluz, asking him questions. But many people are not. Because, I mean, they feel this kind of, despite they, as you said, the people are far better now, technically speaking, than 10 years ago. They still feel the gap, the respect, which is due. I mean, I'm not saying it's not due. But this kind of wall between the speaker and the floor. And if you make it falling, then everyone would grow more. Because, I mean, essentially, I think, as you said, the education is moving from with these big conferences where you see that also companies are investing less and less. If you notice at Link, Terumo is not sponsoring anymore. Cook is not sponsoring anymore. Of course, Link is huge. It's my favorite event from the, you know, I learned the most out of it. But to be honest with you, I think that if I was a CEO of a company, I would invest more, as you said, in workshops with very motivated people where the clinician, let's say the faculty clinician, the fancy guy, goes to other hospitals in other countries and show them there how it works. It's so much cheaper. How much does you want to pay the guy who travels is still so much cheaper.
But
then
why do you like
creating an event like Link?
Yeah, but why do you like Link?
Why do you think, because I have my own ideas, but why do you love Link? Why has Link been so important for you? What part
it
of
has
Link?
Been?
What do you love?
Yeah,
about
it has
Link?
Been. It has been because it has been the opportunity to see stuff which I've never seen before. So to do the live cases and to there see the go. Live cases done.
There you go. Pause there. I think that's Link. Link was
yes,
the
but
first
wait a second.
To come with live cases and see these guys having trouble. Because when these guys have trouble mm-hmm. is when they start creatively talking. And honestly, the most annoying thing is listening to the six stupid guys giving feedback to the operator, which is only a distraction. All I want to see is Andre Smith's brain trying to go through the CTO. And that's my take-home message, because that's what I like to go to Link every 2 years, because sometimes, you know, I feel it's like a little bit of the same, but 2 or 3 years in a part, and you're going to see new technology, and then I get to see the best operators in the world having trouble, and that's the best. When they have
but
trouble,
can I tell you something?
Is the best.
Can I tell yes, you something? I think that this the live case world should be gone. Live case is not fair on two things. First of all, it's not fair on the patient because the live case is usually sponsored by a company and the operator in some way feels sort of pushed to use this product despite maybe it's not the best option for the patient.
100%.
And second thing, it's very difficult to get really the most out of a live case because the live case space is usually short. And we know very well, Miguel, that everyone who does that, of course, this job, that the most interesting cases are not the ones who finishes in an hour, are the one who finish in 3 or 4 hours. That means correct. That you went through mm-hmm. a lot of trouble. Correct. How can you get this out of a live case? Impossible.
100%.
How can you get the emotion, which is connected to the live case in a live-in-a-box presentation? You cannot. Because I'm producing a product which is already ready for you. It's already packed. You know, I had this problem, I had this, and this and that, and this and that. It's like a table tennis of problems and solutions, even the most challenging case. What I try to bring FYA, I try to bring the best out of two worlds. I'm asking the presenter to present a very complex recorded case, which highlights also the technology, the technique that the operator is using by giving the flavor of the live case. So I stop. Guys, I have this trouble. Now what should I do? Paul. And the people vote. And this is what you miss in the live case. In the live case, you know, usually what you get from the live case, you get this kind of emotion of what's next. You know, like a telenovela, as you say in Latin America, you know, like you remember Grecia Colmenares when I was a child doing telenovelas. It's the same. You can think as the operator, now what should I do? And the moment that you share with everyone in the room and you go straight then to the solution, this is where you, let's say, streamline the educational content of a very long case recorded and presented in 20 to 30 minutes. And what is really important for me is not to start the case with "this case is gently sponsored by Boston Scientific." Because that means that if I show a long SFA decanalization, that I'm going to use probably Jetstream and Eluvia. But if I present the case like my most challenging SFA case without any sponsor, and then I use Eluvia, and then I use the Jetstream, it's up to me to discuss the options with you guys and then come up with my option. And I could be also pushed down from from the podium, saying like, "You have done something which most of the people would have not done. Why did you do that?"
I would agree that the live case that is commercialized should essentially be legal. Like, that shouldn't just, like, there should not be an agreement that a case that says sponsored by company A is 100% or 98% chances that you're going to see company A's product. That's kind of fucked up. I think that should be a thing of the past. I do disagree that there's no space for the live cases, because I still think that live cases are very fun. They're very entertaining, and there is an absolute sense of what's going to happen here that nobody has control over. And I think there's a human emotion that will always be tickled by the unknown. And I'm telling you, when I do live cases, it's like a love and hate relationship, because I'm thinking I'm going to go in there and I'm going to do this. And at the end of the day, I have to pivot, and it's the stress. And there's a little adrenaline junkie in me that likes that. And I know that you do too. But as long as it's not hindered by, I'm telling you what company you have to do or what lesion morphology it has to be. Like, if I give you just free reign, and I give you, In the era of, because I'm older than you two, I lived the era where I had 10 minutes or 15 minutes satellite time to do a live case. And so essentially I had to cross the lesion, everything ready.
Yeah.
And then I would go live to deploy at Zilber PTX.
Yeah.
That was it. And then the satellite time would just go away. In the era of the internet, in the era of uninterrupted streaming, we have the capacity to do very, very thoughtful, very reasonable, and incredibly responsible live casing, where at the end of the day, it may not be a success, right? I mean, you have to be prepared. And in a way, I kind of love when things don't go the way you think. And there is a great conversation that could come from all of that. I and Hendolat will make 2-3-4 hour sessions. You know this, Lorenzo. You've been there where you're like freaking out about when's the live. And I'm like, Lorenzo, you have all the time of the world. You're going to come live. We have talks. We go back and forth. You just tell me. And at the end of the day, if you tell me, man, I can't cross, I'm done, the case finishes.
Yeah.
And we've learned a lot because of why, when did you give up or what happened? So I think a combination, a healthy combination with no industry restraints is what probably would make for me the perfect meeting. So I hope that FYA will have at some point some live cases, non-commercialized.
Yeah.
Absolutely non-commercialized. It's just whatever you want to do and at your own pace.
In the era of the internet, like, you did this with Hendolat. Like, you would do like live cases that we would log in through the app. And a bunch of people will log in and they were like, "Well, you're doing the whole case. There will be questions, there will be comments." Those were great.
Yeah, we're starting that in 2025. I just didn't have
the facility. The facility, yeah.
So we had, this is Lauren, so this was the monthly. You were there. I invited you a couple of times where we do the monthly live cases. It was the first Wednesday of every month.
Yeah, I remember.
And I would log in and honestly, it'd be like IVC filter removal. That's it.
No, you did some complex, like...
What I'm saying is whatever was there that day
is
what we would... And that's one of the ones I did.
Yeah.
A removal of a filter. And honestly, I've never had so many questions on the removal of a filter.
Yeah.
But then I would put these crazy things that I would do, and there would be 250 people logged in.
Yeah.
And people would be texting questions, and there'd be a, you know, panelists, but there'd be questions. So I just, people want access, and our, and we as key opinion leaders, big quotes, need to stop giving them bullshit presentations. Everybody's doing what we do and probably even better than what we do.
Well,
we
then have to I think that comes back to, and I think that we don't know this yet. I don't know the answer. It's like, what is the need? Because right now, everybody can do a retrograde access.
Yeah, that's what
everybody.
No, no, no. That's not true.
Well, I disagree with that, especially
that's true. Not true. I mean, like, I would say
percentage of people graduating in the last 5 years. What percent of people that have graduated from programs in the last 5 years do you think can't do retrograde access?
You mean how many people that have finished the training muscle surgery?
Yeah, or interventional 50%. Radiology or interventional cardiology. Okay. You think only 50% can do retrograde access? No way.
100%. Oh, no way. Far less, guys. Far less?
Okay, you're saying
really?
He's thinking like
I'm thinking 80%.
80%. No, impossible.
No way.
Recent grads? No way?
10% defending. 10%. Guys.
What?
Do you think we could do a poll? Do we think we could do an internet poll?
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, to be honest with you, guys, you need to think one thing. One thing are the people who are actually always go to conferences, who are actually on social media, they try to learn from each other. They're in big centers, loads of cases, blah, 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 blah. And this is like a very, very little percentage of all the operators in the world. I'm saying, let's say in the Western world.
Okay? Yeah.
So if you really ask, not that conference, like if you really go door by door, you knock on the doors, in a small hospital, say, do you do CLI? Yes, I do a little bit. What do you do? 80% SFAs, 9% ILIACs, and 1% BTK.
Really?
The more you ask about I'll ask this question. In these peripheral hospitals, the more people won't even do BTK. You know, I've seen that myself. You know, many centers, they have no idea. Just because they are not involved in this kind of tornado of innovation, new approaches and new technology and stuff. So if you ask, you know, in a fancy centers, how many people can do retrograde access? Yes, I agree, 80%. But if you really go door by door, I'm telling you, no more than 10 to 20%.
Well, no, I've talked to
And the challenge is to convince these people that retrograde access could be good. I mean, I had an online talk with the Congress in Italy, and the guy who was before me started saying, "I'm against retrograde access." What does it mean? I'm against retrograde access. Yeah, and this is
that's
the
psychotic.
Or maybe I don't know.
It's in Italy. It's in America. It's in Costa Rica. Wherever you want.
I will say this, Lorenzo. I'll agree with you in principle that these people are untrained, and there is a significant amount of them that are hiding in different pockets of the world. The thing is, those are not our clients. Those are not the people that come to these conferences.
Yeah,
these are the people who are operating every day.
I know, but you have a business to run, right? I mean,
your business is run by needs. So what is the need?
But my business is to educate people. My business is to educate people as much as possible. I want to have as many people as possible
to
open their eyes about the new approaches.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to say is like for you to say that I'm going to do a set. Here's the deal. Do you think it's still valuable in FYA to do a session of a retrograde access for the type of people to come to FYA? You still think it's valuable?
I hope so, because I mean, this year I even put like free subscriptions for people under 35 if they submit an abstract. So yes, I don't want to educate the 60 plus, let's say, very traditional surgeons. I want to educate the new guys, showing them when, why, and how I choose an access compared to the other one. Why I choose a distal SFA access compared to a tibial, compared to a proximal tibial, and discuss the options. And depending on, of course, on the skills and on the material that you have in your lab. So I want you, as a floor, as a young physician, to understand the different options that maybe no one taught you, because, I mean, it's not done in your center.
My biggest concern is that the people that have come to Endolot are probably about the same group of people that have been coming for many years.
Yeah.
And for me to tell them, our first retrograde course was 7 years ago. For me to tell them that 2025's highlights is a retrograde access course.
Yeah.
I'm going to have disenchanted people.
Well, and that, so that's a different
need.
I need to
create a product that adapts to people that, this is for you to think about. You are early enough to where everything is fresh, but you will need to recreate yourself as time goes, because you have to do two things. One, get new people that are going to be enchanted to come. And two, make sure that the content is fresh enough so that the people that love coming don't feel that it's getting bored, you know? And so it's a conundrum.
It's so fresh that I created an open surgical session. So because I think that many people are looking now also, you know, in the tips and tricks of a bypass. So an entire session of my very endovascular meeting,
you know what,
about open surgery.
I've thought about that. I thought of, like, you know, because we do so much less bypass that I've had the thought that people that did vascular surgery 20 years ago, probably we've lost those tips and tricks to the history. And I've always thought, man, if I could ask like 20 vascular surgeons that were high volume doing bypasses from the, you know, 20 years ago, what would they tell me as far as like, no, you do it this way. There's so much knowledge that was probably lost. Because we do 80% of things endo.
Well, for everybody out there,
what was my highlight of the last edition of FYD?
Dr. Patron would love to be a surgeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's coming. I'm good. All right. You know what was the best highlight for me in the last edition?
What?
Was Gonzalo Cabral. Was a surgeon from Portugal, a proper open surgeon who has never done anything endo, but has been writing incredible papers about open surgery, telling me that if you want to get a proper angio of the tibial vessels, you need to put a 4 French, 5 French sheath and introduce 80 milliliters of neat contrast through the sheath in the groin in order to visualize the tibial vessels properly.
Oh,
and that actually, for me, was quite mind-blowing. You know?
Kidneys?
This was my highlight.
My kidneys just had a stroke.
Yeah. Well,
I know.
Sorry.
But I am saying
we have
the moment of the patient is fine from the kidney point of view. Of course.
We're bleeding into our next session, guys. So I think we're going to have to cut it short for this one.
I love this. This is what I love about this format is we could speak for hours and hours.
I know.
So, Lorenzo, we don't want to cut you off, but we will.
Yeah.
we have very important things that you and I need to talk about offline. But for the time being, everybody out there, if you haven't heard of it, I don't know where you've been, but you should. FYA, Find Your Algorithm, is the newest, bestest, most disruptive meeting that has hit the market in the last few years. London 2025. Go to FYA concert, Congress, find out about it, read about it, get into it, schedule it, go find any support, whatever you need to do, make it there. I think you will not regret it. Lorenzo,
can I tell you one last thing?
I'll let you.
One very last thing.
Yeah.
Go.
One last, you know how the idea was born. I offered Charing Cross to do on a Monday before their Congress, waiting for Charing Cross. They said no. And then I started my meeting, and now they tried in any way to stop me and to let me close my business because they are sort of envious. So, you know, as you said before, there's a right time, a right moment to do things, and sometimes sliding doors open, and, you know, God knows what the future is.
Promise me one thing, Lorenzo. Don't ever join them. because they had a chance and they said no. And now you've outgrown them. So don't join them, okay?
Exactly what I said. Very respectful, right, but thanks, no.
God bless you. Thank you very much as always. You're a great friend of the pod. We love you. We'll see you soon, okay?
Thank you. Love you too, guys. Have a lovely
afternoon. Ciao, ciao.
Bye, Lorenzo.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.